Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of A Good Drop, where every other week or so, we find reasons to celebrate, particularly once a year, and clink glasses.
Yes, that's right. We are talking about New Year's traditions, specifically those involving alcohol, because you know, that's what we're about.
Yeah, all about it, in fact.
Yes.
I'm Stu.
I'm Michael.
Cheers.
Cheers. About all the fantastic traditions that exist around the world for celebrating New Year's Eve.
There's more than you'd think. But we can't talk about what happens now without talking about how it all began, can we?
That's correct. And obviously the best known, I'm assuming this is what you're leading into, the best known New Year's tradition is drinking champagne or sparkling white wine.
Everyone calls it champagne, though.
Yes, even though it's only champagne if it's from the Champagne region of France, as you all know, dear listeners.
As I'm sure we've said many times.
So many.
So, of course, we are celebrating with a bottle of bubbly. We have a bird in hand sparkling white, though it looks kind of pink, so...
It does.
Doesn't matter. What you're drinking is irrelevant, essentially, as long as you're happy with it in this particular case.
Yes, it's the drinking of it that is key.
With friends.
With friends, yes, because it's opening the bottle, it's the celebration, it's the effervescence of the beverage.
Yeah. So, shall we get in the Wayback Machine?
Let's.
So, the earliest recorded New Year's celebration to date is thought to occur in Mesopotamia about 4,000 years ago. Originally, the celebrations actually occurred during around about mid-March, during the vernal equinox, which is spring.
Yeah.
And it was considered the start of an 11-day festival that would probably hold our current parties to shame.
Well, yes, we might celebrate for 11 hours, but certainly not 11 days.
The ancient Mesopotamians performed rituals, celebrated the religious victory of the sky god Marduk over the sea goddess Tiamat, and either crowned a new king or allowed their old king to continue his reign. So I think part of it might have been, oh, good, I still get to keep my crown for another year.
Yes, let's celebrate about that as well. Early forms of democracy. Also worth celebrating.
Yeah. But it wasn't always celebrated in... Well, of course, it's no longer celebrated in mid-March. It's now celebrated in January. But how did it get here?
Well, I mean, obviously the change occurred thanks to a man named Julius Caesar, who decided to change the calendar and just tack in a few extra months there.
Specifically, the year 46 BC. He had to add an extra 3 months to line up the Julius calendar with the sun.
Yeah, and so naturally, he added months named after himself and a couple of his friends.
June... July and August.
Yeah, January, July.
January.
Right. That's right. June, July, and August. Yes.
Yeah.
You're correct. Yeah, June, July, and August, with July naturally named after himself.
January and Januarius and Februarius were actually added long before him, which I thought was quite interesting because most of us know that. July and August are Roman inventions.
Yes.
But I suppose the rest of the months, where did they come from? That's a question for another podcast.
Certainly is. We're not historians. But let's bring it around to champagne. because you've already mentioned the royals, and royalty is part and parcel of where champagne and celebration began.
So how did the royals come about it then?
Well, largely, champagne began being something that was produced in small amounts and was very expensive, so only royalty was able to drink it, and they mostly used it to celebrate things, to celebrate inaugurations, to celebrate in general. They were wealthy, they had plenty, they did what they liked. But as time passed, it became easier to produce champagne, became easier to produce sparkling white wine. And also, royalty started somewhat disagreeing with the church. So a lot of occasions where you would have it overseen by a priest, they would just use champagne. So instead of having a priest bless a new ship, you'd break a bottle of champagne on the hull.
That explains that tradition then.
And as it became more and more readily available and more easily produced, it became cheap enough that the poor folk, who had seen it synonymous with celebrating and the wealthy, went, well, at a large event that I want to celebrate and I feel is special, I'm going to have champagne, I'm going to splurge. And thus it became synonymous with celebration.
Indeed. And it was in, well, in early medieval times, everyone celebrated New Year's on March 25, the Feast of Annunciation. And yeah, March 25 was the beginning of the new year. But although New Year's Day was observed on 25 December in Anglo-Saxon England, but William the Conqueror, William the Conqueror decided January 1st was going to be the start of the new year, but eventually joined the rest of Christendom and adopted March 25 for a while. And it was a good 300, 400 years after that, that the Catholic Church eventually decided that January 1st was going to be the day of the new year. New year.
Unless the Roman Catholic calendar,
the Gregorian calendar,
ends on the 31st of December and commences on the 1st of January.
But not everyone still celebrates the New Year's on 1st of January, do they?
That is correct. There are still some places, such as China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, where the New Year is celebrated relative to the lunar cycle, as it has always been, and generally falls in February.
You've also got the Jewish religious calendar. It starts somewhere between September 6 and October 5. You've got the Muslim calendar, which only has 354 days in a year, with the new year beginning with the month of Muharram. In India, the Tamils celebrate the new year at the winter solstice. It's all over the shop.
Yes, it's not really when the new year is, but how it's celebrated that's most interesting. Those traditions are the great ones.
Well, they're all essentially parties, aren't they?
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, there's a Chinese tradition of playing drinking games on New Year's, many involving dice. And in fact, a drinking game that many of our listeners probably know that we refer to as Liar's Dice originated there and is a drinking game that was traditionally played in China on New Year's, along with many other dice-based drinking games.
There you go. I haven't actually heard of that one.
Liar's Dice, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we won't go into that now because this isn't an episode about drinking games.
No, drink responsibly.
Yes, we are talking about traditions. And a very good one, well, a very interesting one, I must say, is the Russian tradition, which does involve champagne or sparkling white wine.
Mm.
And
well, you and I both know that Russia is a fan of French wine.
Yes, absolutely. And this particular tradition involves writing your wish or dream for the upcoming year on a piece of paper, then burning it and sprinkling the ashes into your champagne, and at the stroke of midnight, drinking the whole thing down in one.
Hmm.
Which then supposedly brings those wishes to fruition.
Hmm. Singapore has a similar tradition of writing your wishes down, but instead of burning it and drinking it, which sounds very Russian, you put it in a little raft and send it down the river.
Mm, that's a good one. Now, the Spanish actually have a similar tradition, well, not to that, but similar to the Russian one of putting something in your drink, which involves dropping a gold coin or piece of gold jewelry or really anything gold into your champagne. And again, stroke of midnight, down in one. And if you catch the gold thing in your teeth when you drink the rest of it, then you will bring luck and good fortune upon yourself for the year. And I assume if you don't catch it, you've got bad fortune immediately.
Oh dear. Yeah. Yes, you have the problem of you've eaten something gold.
Yes. Now, the Spanish also have something that's, I'm going to say alcohol adjacent, rather than actually 100% relative to it, which is a tradition that began, and this is the alcohol adjacent part, it was started by viniculturalists in the 1800s.
Mm.
At the end of the year, they weren't selling an awful lot of grapes.
Mm.
And so they decided to make up a tradition that eating 12 grapes at the stroke of midnight brought on luck for the following year.
Mm, one for every ring of the bell.
Yes.
And there's many, many international traditions based on food, with most of them having to do with round food. Beans, citrus. In Italy, lentils in a New Year's dish are meant to lead to prosperity. In the Philippines, it's customary to eat 12 round fruits, one for each month, to ensure a year of abundance.
Mm.
The people in the Philippines have also been dressing with dots on them to enhance the roundness, essentially.
Oh, of course, more round for the year, yes.
Yeah. So, polka dots are becoming the thing to wear.
New Year's polka dots.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, the people in Brazil quite often wear white for New Year's.
Oh, very true, very true. And let's talk about the Japanese New Year's tradition of otoso, which is a special kind of sake that is traditionally drunk at New Year's. It is a spiced sake.
Ooh.
And the name itself has meaning that suggests what its purpose is, because the kanji, the Japanese symbols that they write it with, the first symbol represents evil spirits, and the second means to slaughter. Suggesting that to wow. drink this slaughters evil spirits.
Wow.
So it's a cleansing for the year to come, clearing away the evils of the year just gone.
That sounds a lot like the tradition from Denmark where you smash old plates and glasses against the doors of friends and family to banish away the evil spirits, to chase them away.
Yes, so this is obviously less destructive, but same sort of concept.
Yeah. Well, the Denmark one is less alcoholic too.
Yes.
Unless you get drunk and throw plates.
Well, that's true.
You can. I mean, you could do that anytime.
Yeah. And so the tradition of Ottosaw actually began during the Heian period of Japan, and supposedly began as a result of a far, far older tradition using a similar drink from China. Except that is not a New Year's tradition. The drink developed from that drink, but it's not the same thing.
Right.
Right. And this brings me back to easily my favorite of all the ones I found in my research, which is Scotland. The tradition of first footing.
So who's... Well, if it's your favorite, I'll let you tell everyone what it is then.
Yes. So the tradition of first footing basically says that the first person to cross the threshold into your home after the stroke of midnight makes a difference as to whether or not they will bring good fortune for the coming year or bring bad omens for the coming year.
Depends on how much you like them, I guess.
Yes, well, and apparently it also can't be a person who was in the house at the stroke of midnight.
Ah.
For them to be in there past midnight and leave and come back...
Doesn't count.
Bad omen.
Ooh.
So what it needs to be, and this is why there's apparently a tradition at a lot of New Year's parties, where just before midnight, someone, generally a dark-haired male, because a dark-haired male coming to the door is supposed to bring good fortune, will leave just before midnight. Then after the clock strikes midnight, they'll knock on the door and come in. Mm. And the tradition states that this dark-haired stranger, because it could be a stranger, I suppose once upon a time it was, would arrive with bread, coal, and a couple of other things, but most importantly, scotch.
Most importantly. Yeah, all right.
And those things, you know, represent stuff for the coming year.
Mm. I suppose I can fulfill that role for you, Mikkel. I can leave just before midnight and bring scotch.
Bring scotch, yes. Dark-haired man bringing scotch. But certainly very old tradition says that if it's a woman, it's a bad omen. If it's a light-haired man, it's a bad omen. But the light-haired man thing has its origins in the Vikings sacking Scotland.
I wonder if it's... if it's a woman, it's a bad omen. I wonder if that's from the wife saying, right, you've had enough, off you go, come back home.
Yes, perhaps. Yes, that if it's a woman who shows up, she's probably there to take someone home. At least, you know, back whenever this began, long ago.
1400s.
Yeah.
If the tradition says scotch, it's got to be at least after the advent of distillation.
Mm, well, I mean, specifically, you go back far enough and it says whiskey. Because this actually began from an Irish tradition.
An Irish tradition?
Yes, from the Gaelic tradition of Qualtagh. Well, Qualtag, Qualta, but Gaelic. Anyway, but it has its origins in a Gaelic tradition with a name I can't pronounce.
Not many people can, in Australia anyway.
Yes.
If you know what that tradition is and can pronounce it well, please send us a voice recording of you saying it. We would love to be able to pronounce that right.
We would.
Hmm. So... The Irish also have another tradition that's less alcohol related, and it's called banging of the bread, where you smash bread against the walls to chase off the evil spirits.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Smashing bread against the walls.
Hmm. Bread banging.
Bread banging, right.
As opposed to head banging, I guess.
Yes, I'm sure that head banging doesn't chase away as many evil spirits.
Some say it attracts the evil spirits.
Some say.
So, I guess we're going to just keep this one short and sweet so you guys can get out and party. Oh, I remember now. Should we at least mention the giant ball in Times Square?
Oh, yes. Let's mention the giant ball in Times Square. Why not?
Yeah. Okay, it's mentioned. It's done. Well, because that's essentially a giant New Year's party.
And they've... old tradition. It's been going for quite some time.
Over 100 years now.
And that's impressive. And the ball has had variations over the years, obviously.
Yeah. What does this article say? So it started as a 700-pound ball of iron and wood in 1907, and is now currently a 11,875-pound geodesic sphere covered in 2,688 Waterford crystal triangles and 32,000 LEDs. That's crazy. Like, of course it's extravagant.
Wow. Yeah. And a lot of people, instead of going to any party or getting together with friends, they go to Times Square.
Mm. It's packed. Absolutely packed.
And in fact, one of the things, even that tourists who are going there and intend to be there for a white Christmas and for New Year's, they plan to try and find their way into Times Square to see that ball.
Hmm. But it's impressive. It's an impressive New Year's celebration.
Oh, absolutely. An impressive feat of engineering to see out the end of the year.
Hmm. Indeed. So, I haven't got anything else.
Yeah, that's it for me as well.
So, if you liked what you heard, be sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We are A Good Drop All About Alcohol on your favorite podcast app, including Stitcher, Spotify, Google Music, Apple Music, and many more.
Yes, and do be sure to check out our socials on Facebook and InstaFacebook at A Good Drop Podcast.
Mm. If you want to check out our giant library of previous episodes, jump on our website, agooddrop.com.au, or if you've got any questions, comments, if you've got a favorite New Year's tradition that you want us to know about, shoot us an email to agooddrop@gmail.com.
And be sure to tune in next time when we get back to beers and talk about the new thing that seems to be going on of craft beer makers making really strong beer.
Boozy beers.
Boozy beers. Mm. It's coming up.
They're going to be very strong, aren't they?
Oh, yes. So strong.
Oh, dear. Well, until then, cheers.
Cheers.